I'm so glad to be here. And Bill Staten from Charlotte. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I can't thank AA enough. I've been in a lot of groups, small, medium, large, but there's no fellowship, there's no community, in my opinion, like AA, where everybody's on the same level, regardless of where they come from, the skin color or whatever. And we are totally receptive. If you've ever gone to Carl Sandburg's home in Flat Rock up near Hendersonville, North Carolina, Connemara, and when you're waiting there for the guide to come, they do a little interview with Edward R. Murrow. Remember the old days, and they smoked, you know, live on television. And he interviewed Carl Sandburg. And for some reason, he asked Sandburg, what is the most dangerous word? Sandburg said the word exclusive. The word exclusive is the most dangerous word. Why? Because it keeps so many good things out. And AA is not exclusive. It's welcoming to all of us who want to get sober and stay sober. So I'm very, very thankful to be here with you all this weekend. My wife, Mary, she's the love of my life, and she started Al-Anon about 7 years ago. I think I was a heavy drinker for about 5 years, and it took me a long time to recognize that. Actually, I knew I was an alcoholic, but I just didn't want to admit it. You know how we are. But she knew I was an alcoholic. My whole family knew I was an alcoholic, and you know all the agony you go through to try to cover it up and to tell a lie over here, and then you have to tell another lie to cover up that lie. So it's kind of like when you start to get well, then you don't have to deal with that anymore. And I think it's kind of that way with money, too. A lot of Americans are in real trouble with money. We were talking about it early with Mike, and actually two Mikes and several other fellas, about the credit card companies. I mean, these people are notorious for figuring out all the different ways they can separate you from your money. And I thought I knew all the tricks, but this week I read in a magazine article, and this is something I'd never heard, that some credit card companies now, let's say you have a $5,000 limit on your credit card, and you're at $4,000, and you've never been late on a payment, you've always paid early, so you have no penalty charges or whatever. Some credit card companies now, as you approach your limit, are beginning to jack up the interest rate. You're not at the limit. You're not beyond the limit. You're approaching the limit, and they jack up the rate. What do all of their fellow credit card companies do? They jack up the rate as well, 30%, 31%, 32%, 35%. There's no law in the United States that limits the interest rate that a credit card company can charge you. And I think that's one of the major problems, because it's so easy, even with a debit card, even though that comes out of your checking or your saving account, it's so easy just to pay with plastic. But I'm kind of weird. I'll stand around, and people will go up to the ATM machine, and they'll put the little card in. I'll stand there and say, well, I'm Bill Staten, and I'm a financial advisor, a money manager. How much is it costing you to get your money out of the machine? $1.50, $2, $3. How much are you taking out? Let's say it's usually around $20 or $30. Well, if you're taking out, let's say, $20 and you're paying $3 to take $20 out, you're paying your local friendly bank or whatever 15% interest on your money, and it's your money. Well, one day I was at Harris Teeter in Charlotte. And don't you hate it when you're there and somebody pulls out? They don't pull out a credit card. They don't pull out cash. They pull out a check. And they're sitting there and they're writing a check. And it's usually not to be biased against women, but it's usually a woman. And she's, you know, filling it in and how much it is. But one day there was a lady there, and she was very meticulous. and she was filling in for, I think it was, she wrote a check for $75 to Harris Teeter. And then I said, why do you pay by check? And she said, well, I don't have any credit cards. I don't have a debit card. Why do you pay by check? Because it's more painful that way. Now, this is something I'd never heard from anybody else. She's sitting there writing a check for roughly $75 to the grocery store, but in her check register, she puts down $100. And then she balances the thing out when she gets home. So at the end of every month, by paying with checks and putting more down in the register than she normally is writing the check for, she has extra money. Then she puts that extra money into her investment account. Very, very smart. Very, very resourceful, I thought. My wife and I, even though we're financial advisors and we have a very fine living, I think, but I think we've been through a lot of the problems that a lot of Americans are going through now with excessive credit card debt and trying to, you know, pay off one credit card with another credit card and that kind of stuff. And the credit card companies, of course, love that. Meanwhile, your FICO score that everybody uses, and FICO stands for Fair Isaac Company. They're a publicly traded company. They make a lot of money, and that is the number one financial score that everybody looks at if you're applying for a mortgage or a refinancing or something like that. FICO. But these people, you've got the money, and they want it. And even if you're behind on your credit cards, they'll send you a new deal. You know, write this check, pay off that credit card, and for the next 6 months, we won't charge you any interest. So you got to watch out for that. One of the quotes in our book, and we've got copies of our book, Worry-Free Family Finances. They're free. They're up here, so I think there's enough for each one of you. But we love this quote. It isn't how much money a person makes in his life. It's how one manages one's income and finds peace. And isn't that what sobriety is all about? Not drinking, being sober, being rational, and the same thing with money. I read 2 days ago, you go to Caribou Coffee, you go to Starbucks, you go to your local friendly latte shop, and you buy a latte for roughly $3 with tax. Let's say you do it every day, 5 days a week, and you do it, you know, roughly 50 weeks a year. $3 a day just for the latte. And a lot of people, if you go into Caribou, maybe you do it yourself. You buy, you know, a biscuit or something, and that so it runs the tab up to $4 or $4.50. But a $3 cup of coffee, 5 days a week, invested at 8% a year, which isn't a great rate of return, but it's not bad either. Over a 40-year period, it's $300,000. Now, convert that over to all the booze that you drank and that I drank. You know, I tried to. I was a loner and drank at home pretty much, thinking my family didn't know I was drinking. How stupid was that? Of course they knew it. But I figured it was about $2,000 a year, which is a lot more than $3 a day. And we have a three-year-old grandson who lives in Atlanta. And we're investing. I think about that. Every once in a while I go to a Caribou or Starbucks and I do spend $2.77 for a cup of coffee, but not often. But I think about that $2,000 or so dollars a year I spent on booze that I can now invest on his behalf. $3 a day for a cup of coffee, 5 days a week, over 40 years. By the time he's 43, that $3 a day, $300,000 or more. $5 a day is almost $500,000. $10 a day is almost $1 million. $10 a day. And a lot of people, maybe a lot of you, you went to bars. I mean, $10 is nothing to spend on liquor in a bar. But so it's not liquor. So it's coffee. It's all these little things that we just know we have to have. But do we really, could we do a latte every other day and save $3 every other day. Well, over 40 years, that's only $150,000. Most people who retire today are nowhere near close to $100,000. Furthermore, if they depend on Social Security, come on, I mean, it's bankrupt. I mean, there's really no money in Social Security. People think, they talk about the Social Security Fund like it's a separate government account. There is no Social Security Fund. It comes out of the general budget of the United States of America. And if they want to pay it, they pay it. If they don't want to pay it, they don't have to pay it. So we can't depend on Social Security. And we keep reading about all the companies that lay people off and they don't get their pensions or their pension funds have been raided or whatever. So we've really got to do it ourselves. And thankfully, it's not really that difficult. Even as we get older, we can do a lot of things. My wife and I, this book, Worry-Free Family Finances, again, there's a free copy up here. It's based on six words. Save more, give more, and invest wisely. Save more, give more, invest wisely. Well, the way we attack saving more is it's not some, you know, monster budget and you have to get a computer and you have to have all this software and you have to go all through all this kind of stuff, you know, hoops to make a budget. What we do is we think about all the different ways that we waste money. And a dollar not wasted is a dollar saved that can then be invested in a bank account, in a bond, or in a share of stock like General Electric or, you know, IBM or some quality company like that. And we teach at Charlotte Country Day School, which is right around the corner from where we live. I've been teaching there now for about 20 years and go in 2 or 3 days every semester and work with a group. They're usually seniors. And show them how to take small amounts of money, as little as $50 a month, $600 a year, and turn it into $1 million well before they hope to retire around 65 or whatever. Show them how to do it. It's real easy. And I don't have time to go into that tonight, but our book covers it, and it's very simple. Hopefully, a lot of you are already doing it. Maybe all of you are doing it. But I go in and I work with these kids because I realize that what we all do is we put it off. Well, you know, I just got married and now I've got a baby. I've got another one on the way. And as soon as that one comes, I got another one on the way. And then I've got a parent and they need some help, you know, for the nursing home or whatever. And I just simply don't have enough money. So I've asked our high school kids to come up with a list of some of the things and some of the ways that they waste money. And I think it's actually kind of incredible. One of the kids, and I loved it, he said, don't buy stuff you don't need. I mean, that's an Einstein thought, isn't it? Don't buy stuff you don't need. I was talking with another alcoholic early this week, and we were talking about, we both have a stepson, and we were talking about bills, and he was saying, you know, it's really tight at the end of the month. And he said, but what my wife wants to do, she wants to go shopping. And she wants me to go with her. Now, what do you do when your whole motive is to go shopping? It's to go spend money. You don't really want anything. You don't particularly need anything, but you're just going to go shopping. And he said, so I've told her, I'm not going to go shopping because that'll just mean that I'll spend money. You're going to be going shopping anyway, so I know you're going to be spending money. But I don't need to go along with you. I don't need to be spending money with you. And the kids are great. They talk about ATM charges. They talk about going to South Park Mall in Charlotte, and they'll go by the Gap, for example. And there'll be a sale, 2 sweaters for the price of one. So they'll buy the 2 because they buy one, they get one free. Then they get home and they find out, well, I've already got a sweater like that, but it's a different color, but I'm too lazy to take it back. My story is a $30 hammer. Many, many years ago, when we moved into a new home, I was trying to hang some pictures, and I couldn't find my hammer. that I'd had forever. And I looked and I looked and I looked. So I rushed out to Walmart and I found one of the custom rubber grips. You know, the hammer built to last a lifetime. $30 I paid for this hammer. Brought it home, hung one picture. Next day, found the missing hammer. But I was too lazy to take the $30 hammer back. So I just decided to put it on the wall as a reminder that, hey, don't go out and waste money like that. And that's what we all do. I think Americans in particular are victims. We victimize ourselves with all the various ways that we waste money. The high school kids talk about it. They'll go to the fast food court and they'll buy lunch for $6, but they eat $3 worth, so $3 is wasted. Just goes into the trash can when the janitor, you know, comes along. And it was interesting. A few years ago, I was at a school on opposite side of town from where I live, and there was a kid sitting on the front row, about where you're sitting. And I said, "How much money do you waste? How much money do you waste?" He said, $50. I said, $50 a month? No, $50 a week. $200 a month times 12, $2,400 a year. And I said, "Are you doing drugs?" He said, "No, I'm not doing drugs. I'm not selling drugs. Don't use drugs." But that's the kind of money that I earn, and my parents give me some money, and I waste it. I just waste it. I go out and I blow it. So that's how we come at saving more. We have a real simple way of figuring out where some of your wasted money goes. Take a little 3x5 card with you for a week. And every time you spend a dollar or more, whether it be cash or credit card or a check, write down on the card, like today is Friday. Friday, I spent a dollar for a Coke out of the soft drink machine. I spent $2 getting cash out of the ATM machine. And you write it down. Do that for 7 days. And you will find that's where a lot of your money goes. Just a dollar here, $2 there, $5 there, $10 there. And that's one way, we believe, a simple way that everybody can help control the waste. So by wasting less money, we end up saving more, and we're better off financially. The second part of it, save more, then give more. We very much believe in giving. We've had some hard times financially, Mary and I, but we have always pledged to a lot of different organizations. AA happens to be one of them now. And we have always made good on the pledges, even if it took us a year or more to make good on it. We believe that giving is paramount as a wealth-building strategy. But you don't give in order to get the wealth. You just give to give. We in AA help other alcoholics. We help ourselves by helping others and giving financially. I played in a golf tournament 2 days ago by the 12-Step Club, sponsored by the 12-Step Club in Charlotte. For those of you who play golf, you know if you have a 37 handicap, you're a lousy golfer. Well, my handicap is 37. I am a lousy golfer. We played Captain's Choice, and believe it or not, I couldn't even believe it, my team won. My team won. I actually sank a putt. It should have been on international television. It was that kind of spectacular putt. But it's a giving. And so we can't emphasize, Mary and I cannot emphasize that enough. Giving not only of your time and your talent, but also of your money, whether it be a dollar or two at an AA meeting or whatever, contributing to your church or your synagogue or charities or whatever. There's been Dr. Carl Menninger of the Menninger Clinic. He's been dead for a number of years, but he said one of the best criteria for good mental health is giving. People with a giving heart, people with a giving pocketbook, they have fewer mental problems. They have a lot less stress in their lives, even if they don't have much money. But I can guarantee you if you give a buck, you'll end up, one way or another, you're getting a lot more than that back. Even if you feel like, I don't have a buck to give. I don't have $2 to give. I remember the parable that Jesus told about the poor woman when they passed the basket or whatever. She put her last two pennies or whatever the coins were into the basket, and she had nothing left. The size of the gift, in our opinion, is not by whether it's $1,000 or $10,000 or $100,000. It's how much you have left after you give it. And this woman, who had practically nothing, gave all the coins she had. And what did Jesus say? He said to her that you will be rewarded for that gift. If we go back to the wasting less principle, where we hear a lot now about global warming, we hear a lot about carbon monoxide and dioxide in the atmosphere and so forth. There are all kinds of ways. I think we're better stewards of the planet if we seek ways to waste less. And that doesn't mean we have to be, we don't have to scrimp around and we don't go out and have a hamburger and a cup of coffee or whatever. It doesn't mean that at all. It doesn't mean we don't have any fun, never go to a movie, never buy a box of popcorn. But it just means that if we take care of our money, I think our money will take care of us. And if we continue with that philosophy of giving of our time and our talent and our money, it pays off big time, big, big time. My grandfather was John Staten. My father's father was a banker, Bethel, North Carolina, in Pitt County, near East Carolina University. And he was a big believer in saving. He was not a spendthrift, but he was very, very generous. And I'll never forget one Saturday our Methodist church caught fire. And billows of smoke everywhere. And he was in tears because the church was burning down. And what did he do? Well, first of all, he was thinking about how can we raise enough money to rebuild the church like it was before and actually make it even better. And second of all, I'll never forget this. I was about 12 or 13. He was thinking about what can I do right now to help the firemen who are trying to put out the fire? What can I do to give to those men to help them out right now? North Carolina's divided, the Methodist Church anyway, into a Western North Carolina Conference and an Eastern North Carolina Conference. And we were in the Eastern North Carolina Conference. And the Western North Carolina Conference had a pension system for the pastors such that when they retired, they at least had a little bit of money to live on. But Eastern North Carolina didn't have anything. So my grandfather, John Staten, personally got together a group of caring people, just like the fellowship from AA, got together and they set up a pension plan for the ministers in Eastern North Carolina. And he was ahead of that group for about 20-some years. Then my dad took it over, and then my dad's best friend, who was an attorney, took it over. So between the three of those men, that was their gift to those ministers for about a 35-year period. And that retirement plan has continued to grow and has continued to thrive. I was fortunate to grow up in a family that really did believe in giving to other people. And in little old Bethel, North Carolina, it had 1,800 people when I was born. It had 1,800 people when I left. It still has 1,800 people. It's a type of community where you'd go on vacation for 2 weeks and you'd come back home and there'd be a pie in the refrigerator and somebody would write a note, we borrowed a pound of sugar and you left your light on in the bathroom upstairs and we turned it off or whatever. We borrowed 3 light bulbs. Just that kind of community. You didn't have to worry about theft because really nobody knew what theft was. But it was a very giving community. My high school, we had 110 people, and that was grades 8 through 12. When my dad graduated, he was one of 12. There were 2 men, 10 women. When I graduated, there were 21 of us. Three are dead now, and the other 18 of us are still alive. Amazing to me that I thought I would never, I said I wouldn't mind living here in Bethel. I moved away to Charlotte, but everybody else lives within 35 miles of Bethel. But it was that kind of community, again, like the AA Fellowship, where everybody was interested in giving and giving as much as they could. So saving more by wasting less, giving more. John Wesley, who founded the Methodist Church, basically said, I'm not as eloquent as what he said, but he basically said, earn all the money you can without hurting anybody else. Save all the money you can. Cut off every unnecessary expense. And give all the money you can. So it was never a question of, is $1 million too much? Is $10 million too much? Somebody asked me a few years ago, one of our clients, they said, Bill, how much money would you like to earn? And I said, as much as I possibly can. Why? Because the more money that I could earn and Mary and I could earn, the more we could give away. So I would like to earn as much as I possibly can, because all those dollars we can give away after we take care of basic necessities. And saving $2,000, $2,500 a year on not buying booze goes a long, long way. Now we talk about investing. Save more, give more, invest wisely. Investing comes if you're a Catholic or Jewish and or you're in a church where they have the vestments. You know, you're in a vestment. Well, if you look at the word, the root word, we talk about the basic needs: food, clothing, shelter. That's what investing is all about. To provide food, to take care of clothing, to take care of shelter, to take care of basic necessities. So in the church, if you have a vestment and you're in it, it's an investment. It comes from the Latin word investir. Now let's look at investing. A lot of, you know, you see these infomercials of, you know, I walked into town and I was broke, and a week later I walked out, I was worth $500,000, no money down on real estate. Is it really that easy? I think not. I don't think it is. But what about if you owned $50 worth or $100 worth of Walgreens or GE or Walmart? You know, Walmart gets a lot of bad press. But you know what? The press is all about bad. Walmart hires more people than any other corporation in the world. They hire more minorities than any other corporation in the world. They hire more elderly people than any other corporation in the world. They hire more disadvantaged people than any other corporation in the world. And in every community that Walmart goes into, they lower the prices overall. Well, owning a piece of Walmart is a good way to make money. And fortunately, there are dozens and dozens of companies today where you can literally buy $50, $100, $200, $300 worth of shares of stock, and you have your little piece of that business. And in many cases, you can invest directly with a company. You don't have to call a stockbroker. You can even do it online. Our grandson, who's 3 years old, we're investing in two different companies, and he already has about $5,000 worth of stock. He's 3 years old. So he's going to be in good financial shape as far as going to college. There'll be plenty of money for him to be able to do that, even though we haven't put a lot of money into his investment. So when you own a piece of McDonald's or a Coca-Cola or a Pepsi or whatever, those companies continue to make money and they continue to grow. And whether you have one share, 100 shares, 1,000 shares, 100,000 shares, percentage-wise, as that company continues to grow and prosper, you will continue to grow and prosper. And a company like General Electric, I mean, isn't that where your light bulbs come from? General Electric, founded by Thomas Edison. By the way, Thomas Edison did not invent the light bulb, but he was the one who had the brain power to bring it to market. And Sam Walton, 1949, Bentonville, Arkansas, set up a little discount operation. I think it was called Sam Store or something like that. He had no idea that Walmart would become the global colossus that it is today. But he had a dream. He said, as long as we are serving our customers and doing right by them, we will continue to grow and prosper. It's really true. Whatever business you're in, whatever committees you're on, whatever you're doing in your life, if you are truly trying to help other people and doing what's right by them, then as far as I'm concerned, I mean, you have the life. Jesus, Buddha, Confucius, any of the great leaders would come up to you and say, you are living a fulfilled life. And that's really what it's all about. You know, we as alcoholics, I mean, what was it all about? It was all about us. It was all about drinking. It was all about trying to cover up all these different things that we didn't want to face. But then when we stopped drinking, all of a sudden, we had to start facing ourselves. We had to start looking in the mirror and say, hey, the person that was taking the drink, that's really not me. That's a person taking a drink. But I'm really not that person. And I have realized that, you know, when you hear about people and you hear about this Foley guy and the stuff he was doing with Pages or is alleged to do with Pages, and my first thought was, I feel sorry for the man. I mean, if he's really an alcoholic, if he's on drugs or whatever, I mean, he really doesn't know what he's doing. And he needs help, just like we all need help. So our six words of wisdom are save more, give more, and invest wisely. There are all kinds of ways to invest. There was a great story about a man named Jesse. And he set a bunch of track records in 1 hour. They called him JC when he was growing up. Then he went to Berlin in the Olympics in front of Hitler and set 3 or 4 world records, Jesse Owens. He was inspired by a black man. Jesse Owens inspired numerous other people, not only because of his color and what he was able to do through all of the racism that he was up against, but he was such a giving personality in spirit. He was the type of person that if 100 kids came up after an event, he would sign all the autographs. Not like a lot of people in sports today. If you've ever been to the San Diego airport, they have pictures of various sports heroes. And one I'll never forget, I can't remember her name, but this woman set a world record. I think it was for the 100-yard dash or the 200-yard dash or something like that. A world record. The next day, she had both feet amputated because she had gangrene. But the day before, she set a world record. She had a dream about setting that record. And Mary and I very much believe in dreams. Goals are fine, but once you reach a goal, you're there. But dreams are unlimited. Dreams are unlimited. Robert Shula, if you've ever watched The Hour of Power, I mean, the man started in a drive-in movie theater, and his church is part of the church of Norman Vincent Peale. Norman Vincent Peale, as you know, wrote The Power of Positive Thinking. And he went to publisher after publisher after publisher and could not get the manuscript even looked at. So one night he came home and he told his wife, Ruth, positive thinking doesn't work. Put it in the trash can, threw the whole thing. That was in the old typewriter days. She picked it up, put it into her purse, and just carried it around with her. One day she was on Fifth Avenue in New York, and she met a friend in their church who was a literary agent. And she said, take a look at this. I really think Norman's done a good piece of work. And it became The Power of Positive Thinking, which is still one of the best-selling books of all time. And if you read the book, and I'm rereading it again, he uses the term higher power. He uses God as well. He uses Great Spirit, Creator. But he also uses the term, which we're all familiar with, higher power. Well, he had the dream. Robert Shuler was part of that church, so he's at the drive-in theater, and he invites Norman Vincent Peale to come and give a sermon. And when Dr. Peale got there on the, you know, the thing where they tell you what the name of the show is, it says, Dr. Norman Vincent Peale, To Hell and Back. That was a movie, To Hell and Back. And he told that story in 1987. He died shortly thereafter. She's still alive. She's 101 years old. And she said, one of the things that has kept our marriage solid is that we always made the bed together every morning. Real simple. Even in a hotel, they made the bed together every morning. But he was a dreamer. We can all dream because dreams are unlimited. There's no telling what the brain power in this room and at this assemblage of 470 some of us this weekend can do in terms of helping other people, in terms of serving God, in terms of making the world a better place. Mary and I believe very strongly that one of the ways to make the world a better place is to get our own finances into shape and get them better and better and better and figure out all the different ways we can to earn as much money as we can so we can give it away, so we can help other people. We've got time for questions, and if you have some, I'd love to try to address them. I know it's late. Gosh, it's way past my bedtime. Any questions? Well, please, I'll tell you what. Well, after this is over, I'm sorry. Yes, sir.
Say you've got one of those credit cards that you're still paying a high interest rate on.
Uh-huh.
Is there any way to get out of that freaking...
The question is, if you've got a high interest rate credit card, well, I think here's what I would suggest. Now, you can call the toll-free number on the back of the card, and you'll get probably somebody in India who speaks English, but you don't understand what the English is. What I would do, seriously, and I have done this myself, we had a problem with American Express. We paid the bill every month. It was a business American Express card. And my wife was in the hospital in New York, and I was ill down in Florida at a seminar at the same time, and we were late on a payment by about 2 days. The next bill came in, and they had jacked the interest rate up to 31%. I thought, this is abominable. Here's what I did. I wrote the chief executive of American Express. I said, this is outrageous. We charge a ton of money on our credit cards. We've always been prompt. And this is just not right. They refunded interest charges going back for I don't know how many months, and they lowered the rate. Of course, we're not paying that interest rate. I would write, if it's a Bank of America card or whoever it is, I would write the CEO. You can look it up at the library or go online and find out who the chief executive officer is, and write them a nice note, not an angry note, because CEOs at all these companies have a staff of 4, 5, 6, 7, maybe 10 or 12 people. And they will respond to you, particularly if you handwrite it on the envelope. Mary and I very much believe if you've got a problem, don't call the toll-free number. Take it to the top. Take it to the person in charge, because they will respond. They don't want you to be mad at them. And I think you'll get results. And if you've got several credit cards where you owe money on different ones, try to pay as much as you can on the highest interest rate card first and then work your way down. Yes, sir. Good. Believe it or not, there really are some good financial advisors who will help you. If you see me after the meeting, maybe I can put you together with one who can work with you and give you some help. Yes, sir. I'll see you after the meeting. How about that? Okay. Yes, sir.
Do you advocate not using credit cards at all?
No. Well, I think if you're really trying to rein in your expenses, I think a cash basis is probably the best way to go. But I think credit cards do have a lot of benefit. The problem is they're addictive like alcohol and other drugs. They just, you know, so if you can, obviously none of us could take a few drinks and hold it in, right? And it's the same thing with a lot of people. They just can't control the spending because you charge it and you don't see the bill till the end of the month. I deal with them. As I said, I grew up in eastern North Carolina, and Kaufman's Menswear has been in 50 years in business. George Kaufman, nice family. But here's what they do when you come to the store. You know, most stores, when you check out, they give you a bill, you pull out your credit card, you write a check or whatever. They don't do that. They actually have charge accounts, real old-fashioned charge accounts. So what they do, if you're buying, this is one of their sport coats. So I buy the sport coat in June of this year, but I don't know how much it cost because I didn't sign anything. Then I love the sport coat, so when I get home and get the bill, I think, oh, my gosh, I can't believe I spent that much money. But it was fun because, you know, they didn't show me what the price was. And they really don't want you to pay with a credit card because they want to use the charge account. Yes, sir.
As far as living on a budget, you mentioned cash basis. The only thing I've really heard was pay your bills out of your checking account, your mortgage, your car payment, and then for all the other non-fixed expenses, cash a check through an envelope. Can you speak to, can you comment about living on a budget?
Yeah. Yes, he was talking about really living on a budget. When Mary and I got married back in 1994, she was really a budget type of person, and I was just kind of a shoot from the hip spender. And you know, if I spend too much money, somehow I'll be able to work myself out of it, which is really stupid thinking. And then it turned out that I took over the budgeting. I set up a spreadsheet. I've got it down to a nickel now. I mean, if somebody comes and we pay them to mow the lawn and it costs $50 or whatever it costs, I write it down and we go over it every single month. But again, back to your question, I think when you're trying to keep fiscal sanity, to keep your pocketbook sober, the more you can pay with checks and cash, I think the better off you are, because it's painful to me to pull 10 bucks out of a wallet or write a check for 50 bucks. But a credit card, there's no pain at all. You just run it through the machine or hand it to somebody and they run it through the machine and you sign it. And now, you know, a lot of credit cards, anything under $25, you don't even sign for anymore. So you don't know. You go to Caribou and give them a credit card and you don't know what they charged you for the coffee if you don't look at the slip. And like that lady I was talking about early on, you know, who would write a check for $75, but she would put $100 in her register. And she planned, just like planning every day to not drink, planning every day to stay sober, planning every day that I'm going to have some money left over at the end of the month instead of I've got too much month at the end of the money. Which is what, unfortunately, a lot of Americans are in that kind of shape. Yes, sir. Wonderful. Fantastic.
However, every quarter I get this statement where it's lost money. This gets very disappointing and discouraging. And there's a lot of talk I hear on radio programs and whatnot now about discontinuing that and investing in gold and silver and that it should take off.
Well, the problem with gold and silver and things like that is they don't pay you any income. And most of what you hear in the press and what you hear on the radio, what you see on the television about money and so forth is gossip. In my opinion, it's gossip. It's given to you by broadcasters and writers. They're not actually in the financial arena. We invest for ourselves and on behalf of our clients where we manage their money. We buy quality companies like Home Depot and Walmart, companies like that that pay a cash dividend, and they raise a dividend year after year after year. Now, in the case of your 401k, I'm assuming you're probably in mutual funds because you don't have any other choice. Would that be right? And I'm also assuming that up to a certain point, the company where you all work is matching it. Okay, a certain percentage of it. So even if the funds are down temporarily, think about it like this. If you're putting in $3 and they're putting in, let's say, $3 on the first $3, and it goes down 50% in value, you've still got your original investment back. So I would just keep at it. What I normally recommend in something like a 401k where you normally have mutual funds, in some cases you'll have 15 or 20, maybe even 25 or 30 different funds, and you have no idea whatsoever who the managers are and what the style is or whatever. But your benefits people can rank them by risk, number one being the riskiest and, say, number 20 being the least risky. And I would concentrate my money in the three or four in the middle. Like if you have 15, concentrate on 6, 7, 8, and 9 and put 25% of your money into each one of those four. That way you're not too risky on the one end, but you're not too conservative on the other end. And do take advantage, like you and your wife are doing, which is very smart. Take advantage of that corporate match. You just can't beat that. You'll do fine. What people tend to do is they tend to do stuff like you're talking about. They tend to buy gold and they tend to buy silver and stuff. I'll never forget the last time gold hit. I think it was $840 an ounce, and I think it was 1982. And I knew gold had peaked in price. How did Bill Staten know that? Because my secretary and her husband had just taken all of their retirement money and they had bought gold. And what did gold do? Like that. And it still hasn't recovered. And the other thing is, you know, a lot of financial advisors, or you'll hear this stuff on television or an infomercial, put 5 or 10% of your money in gold. All right? So the U.S. economic system collapses, and you've got 10% of your money in gold. Can you live off 10% of your money? You take a gold bar worth, say, $20,000 down to the drugstore. Could I have change for this, please? I mean, come on, what are you going to do with it? I mean, you can't spend it. And a lot of people are buying it in places like Australia, the Perth Mint. So you buy gold in this country, and it's stored in Australia. So we have an economic holocaust, and your gold's over there in Australia. Well, how are you going to get it? They're not going to ship it to you. You going to fly over there? I don't think so. I like companies that pay a return. Like Walmart has paid a higher cash dividend 44 years in a row. Warren Buffett, who's the smartest investor on the planet, all of you have heard of him. He's worth, you know, $45 billion or something. He bought Coca-Cola. He owns 8% of Coca-Cola. He bought it in 1980-something and paid what I thought was a premium price. But today, on an annual basis, he gets more dividend income on an annual basis off his shares of Coca-Cola than his original price. Now, that's what I call a good investment. And Coke keeps raising the dividend. What's it got in it? A drug, a legal drug, caffeine. And sugar is not a drug, but it's pretty addictive to a lot of people. And it sells all over the world. Coca-Cola, there are 198 nations in the world. Coca-Cola is in every single one. And so is Pepsi. Yes, sir. Have you gone to somebody like United Way or a local credit counselor? They usually, in every community, a decent-sized community, normally has somebody like through United Way that can help you do something like that. I'll talk with you further if you like. Looks like everybody's leaving. It's bedtime, so I've enjoyed being with you. And come up and get your free book. Thank you for being here.